This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We are here every Sunday night, and that includes tonight, July 31st.
Surprisingly enough.
That's right. My name's Alon, and that's
I'm Nate.
Right
as
there.
As always.
So, earlier today, we had an interview with everybody's favorite lawyer, Jack Thompson. He's the guy who's on a crusade against, I mean, not really the video game industry, but against violence in video games, and apparently sex in video games, too. He doesn't like killing or love very much, so...
He needs to help our freedom by taking it away.
Yeah, this, if you go to his website, stopsteal.com.
Surprisingly level-headed guy,
yeah,
from what we found out.
It's so tough. Like, Nate and I were just saying before the show started that we're really, we just feel exhausted because for an hour and 20 minutes, we were talking to this guy. And it was just tough because I would, you know, ask him a question and he would go on for, like, forever about... Oh. Whatever it was, and then he would go back to some previous topic and talk about that forever some more, and I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
This it was worse for you, because you talked for him for, like, a long time.
I
was just doing stuff for the show, sitting in the chair on my computer, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
I just feel exhausted talking to this guy, and, like, I need to polish up on my interview skills, because I was not taking enough control, and I've got the copy now. The problem is that we just did the interview, and I haven't had time to edit it, so we're not going to play it tonight. I am going to play a little clip before we go to break. I think Andrew's working on setting it up.
I believe it's going to be a roulette. We're just going to get this
pick 30, a spot.
34
spot.
Minutes, 17 seconds, bam, play.
Yeah. So anyway, next week we're going to play an edited, meaning, you know, slightly cut down version so we can actually fit it in a show, version of the interview. And so you'll be able to hear what Jack Thompson says. We would have loved to have him on live, but...
It's like 10 o'clock over there right now, so he wasn't going to do it.
It's 10 o'clock in Florida, you know, he's an old guy.
He's got to fix food for his kid before his wife comes home.
I don't know what he has to do, but he wasn't...
That's what he told me.
Did he? Oh, he didn't tell me that. So anyway, we'll have the recorded interview on next week, and we'll play a little clip tonight. And I will also promise to put on the entire interview, start to finish, online for all of you people who really want to get hold of it. I got to warn you, some of it... Pretty boring.
Pretty drab.
Yeah, pretty dry. But in the interest of full disclosure, I don't want people to think I'm editing and making him sound worse than he is or anything, which, you know, maybe I'll do for the recorded version on the air. But you can listen to the entire thing from our website. I'll get that ready sometime in a few days. It'll be on the website. Check it out. It'll be apparent. So let's talk about this interview a little bit. First of all, anyone listening needs to understand that in the studio, it was all jury-rigged together because you know, the radio station's playing its radio stuff, and we're in another room doing this interview. We only had one set of headphones.
Had our ears blown out a couple times with that high-pitched wheeling.
Yeah. Nate couldn't hear what was being said when I was talking to Jack, and then I couldn't hear what was said when Nate was talking to Jack.
It's pretty much like if you're in the living room and someone's talking in the kitchen.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how the interview sounded to me.
Exactly. So I think maybe we had him repeat a few things to each other, but or to each of us. But the bottom line for me was, turns out, the guy has actually a lot of interesting things to say, and he's not as crazy as all of the gaming websites make him out to be. Truth be told, in the end, he's got a lot of viewpoints I completely disagree with.
He kind of went crazy at the end when you talked to him last. But like you said, he had some pretty fair, you know, and good ideas, you know, as crazy as that is about stuff.
Now, one of the biggest concerns is everybody... All the gamers and stuff that wrote into our website and wrote on the forums about the fact that we were doing this interview, they all say, you know, that guy's a total joker. He won't listen to anything you have to say. You know, why even bother talking to him? And the truth is, he had a lot of valuable things to say. And what's beautiful about the interview we do here is that it doesn't truncate him. It's everything he wanted to say pretty much got out, which I didn't intend on
his long monologues between questions.
I didn't intend to just provide a forum for this guy to spew his whatever. I don't want to call it propaganda because it was pretty level-headed. But that's what some of it turned out to be. But
he had some points, you know.
The important thing, one of the most important things to me to note, is that he's not just aiming to shut down video games, and he's not aiming to shut down violent or sexually themed video games. He just wants to do what most of us think is sensible, which is restrict access of those games and entertainment, you know, whatever, if it's music or television or whatever, limit the accessibility to children. That's all. I have said I would love to see the video game retail companies like GameStop and EB step up to the plate and officially tell all their employees, hey, if it's a mature rated game, don't sell it to someone who's not in the mature age range, meaning under 17. If it's an adults only game, which they've never had until the new GTA game, don't sell it to someone under 18. But they've never had that rule. It's been like, oh, well, you know what? We're not going to sell GTA because it's kind of violent. but these other mature games we're not going to say anything about. We're not going to play them in the demo kiosks, but anyone can buy them. We're going to pre-sell them, but we're not going to sell the real game to them. They don't have any hard and fast rules. And really, they're, you know, the last barrier of defense for this horrible, horrible content, which, you know how I feel. I'd love to play it anyway, but the truth is we should sort of help the job of the parents who are ill-equipped or ill-concerned or whatever, and, you know, take it upon ourselves to be like, hey, you know, little Johnny, he's not going to buy it. His parents will buy it for him. He'll get a hold of it anyway. Great. The parents get to have the final say, but we're not going to sell it to him. And we don't have that rule. And apparently, Jack has pointed me to the new law passed in Illinois that does have these sort of restrictions, although I'm honestly not 100% familiar on how the law works, but I will be fairly soon. So that was, I think, the most important thing that I got out of it. Nate had some other things to talk to him about.
I basically wanted to talk to him about The Sims, because he was saying that he found out that there was, like, penises and vaginas and all this bad stuff in The Sims 2.
Labia.
Yeah. Pubic hair. Let's throw out some other words.
Yeah.
But anyways, I just wanted to know what game sites, because he said they were on game sites. And I was like, well, which ones were they? And he's like, oh, that was a mistake. And I rectified it. But now get this, he was saying that the actual Sims 2 is worse than San Andreas, which
yeah.
I thought was total, because it was modded, which apparently is breaking all these copyright laws.
This is the part.
EA is not coming after them, so they're at fault.
Yeah, we started talking about this towards the end of the interview, because he had so much to say about everything else. And this is where it blew my mind, and I totally disagreed with him. He essentially said it is not only EA's right, but EA or any developer, or basically anyone who has a copyright, it is their responsibility to go after people who modify things, claiming also that modifying broke
copyright
rules, which
it doesn't
have to. It can. If you're using assets and then changing them and, you know, re-injecting them in the game, you're using their IP and you're breaking the copyright license. Well, assuming so, because every copyright is unique.
The way he was talking to me, he was saying, like, Will Wright was saying, you know what, guys, I want you to make a porno game.
Yeah,
Big time.
He said to me, and we have the interview for you guys to hear, flat out said, you know, EA is contributing to, you know, people creating pornography in their game. And Will Wright flat out said that he wanted it to happen. And it's bull. And let me tell you, if Will Wright did say it, he was joking, because that's the kind of guy he is. He would joke like that.
Well, I was trying to explain to him that modding does help games. I mean, it extends their life a lot. You know, and I'm sure that's what he meant. I doubt he meant that, you know, I want a porno game. You know?
Yeah, but beyond that, first of all, you don't have to break copyright, because you can do that stuff without any assets, and you're allowed to do whatever the hell you want with your own stuff that you bought.
As long as it doesn't, you know, conflict with the existing IP or another IP.
But on top of that, it's not the responsibility of anyone ever to sell anything. You don't have to put a copyright on it. I don't have to copyright something and sell it. I can sell it with the rights to give out. The guy from Nine Inch Nails, what's his name? Yeah, why do I know it? Now I can't remember. But anyway, like, he has some of his songs out there for people to download and remix, and it's totally allowed. He says, I want you to take this. I want you to use your Macintosh and whatever mixing program they have. I forget what it is, a GarageBand or something, and mix these songs. And it's allowed. And so you can make whatever license, whatever rules you want with your license, and EA is not responsible for attacking them and taking it off the web and, you know, reducing the amount of this content available to everybody. And he's going off like a friggin' moron. And this is the part where his sanity broke down for me. But, like I said, you'll hear plenty of other stuff in the interview that actually makes a lot of sense. He also clears up sort of the intention of the class action lawsuit, which is currently taking place against Take-Two, which he is not a part of, but some old grandma bought a game for her 14-year-old son, bought Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, and the class action lawsuit is suing based on the fact that Rockstar and Take-Two misrepresented the game by selling an adults-only game as mature. I also disagree with this, though.
She shouldn't have bought it anyways for her 14-year-old.
But that's not the point. The point is that they misrepresented in their advertising.
Well, you know, they were dumb, because they did lie. Because it's like, oh, the mod people, they just put that in there. It's like, oh, no, wait, they just changed a bite.
Yeah, Take-Two certainly ruined themselves by lying.
Yeah.
And then, later, they admitted they accepted the changed rating. But, I mean, what else are they going to do, right? But
yeah.
Jack was giving me crap about how they accepted the rating and said, okay, it is adults only, which is still bull.
I believe we brought up other games that had comparable. I believe we were talking about God of War.
Oh, my God, God of War, we saw this last night. Andrew, I wish you could see it.
It's awesome.
Not an hour into the game, you play God of War, you've got cinematic CG scenes.
Not only are you having a threesome, you're interacting with it.
Yeah. And before that, there's CG with, you know, a couple of ladies, very buxom ladies. They're fully disrobed.
Trent Reznor was the name. I just thought of it.
Very nice ladies, by the way. And then you interact with them and you, you know, simulated sex acts. You don't see it.
You don't see it, but you press
but
buttons.
You hear it.
And your controller vibrates.
Anyway, we've got John from the Behemoth on the line, and we are going to interview him as soon as we come back from these messages. So everybody stay tuned. This is going to be a great interview with one of the guys involved with the production of Alien Hominid. We'll be right back.
Hackers. They're everywhere, and I'm not talking about the kind trying to infect your company's website. No, you're under attack from the competition, stifling your research, preventing your career change, stopping you from having your own business or advancing your career. Make the University of Advancing Technology's graduate degree in technology your first line of defense in the fight against life's hackers. The Master of Science in Technology from UAT is unlike any other program around. Focus in customized areas like network security, artificial life programming, game studies, technology management, and e-commerce. UAT's program is accelerated. It offers the flexibility to adapt quickly to changes that come in the high-tech field. It's really about creating thinkers who understand how business works and how to apply the technology. Learn, experience, innovate at the only local private university totally immersed in technology. Click uat.edu. UAT.edu.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Before we move on, I want to mention you hopefully heard a commercial from the University of Advancing Technology. Myself, as well as
I am going there currently.
We have had the opportunity to attend, and it's not horrible. Not a bad school. If you want to learn about it, go to uat.edu, and that's how you can get into the video game industry.
Don't have Firefox, though. Doesn't like it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Use Microsoft Internet
Explorer.
Oh, man,
I have been complaining to them to get that change.
It's funny, because the people at the head of the school use Macs.
I know.
Anyway, so we have John Baez. Is that the right pronunciation?
It's Baez.
Baez, excuse me.
Yeah, like Joan Baez.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, of course, you're John.
Yeah.
From the Behemoth. And, all right, so to let everybody know, the Behemoth is the independent developer. They created the game Alien Hominid, which was put out... It was first on the GameCube, am I right?
No, actually, it came out simultaneously for the GameCube and the PS2.
Okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. So they came out, and it was sometime last year, right?
Yeah, it released for the holiday season. And we released on Xbox and PS2 at the end of May in Europe and Australia.
But it hasn't hit Xbox here in America yet.
No, no.
But it will very soon, right?
No, that's unlikely.
Wait, not at all?
Not at all.
Why did I think it was coming out on Xbox here?
I thought it was.
Well, there were some rumors on GameSpot because someone had looked on the GameStop website, and GameStop has a tentative date, but...
oh, man, I know all about GameStop.
I don't think
they have their heads right up somewhere. All right, well, you know, you heard it here.
Yeah.
Right from the horse's mouth.
Not.
So, I said that you're an independent developer. Can you clarify that for everybody? What exactly does that mean when we say that you're independent?
Well, there's a number of different definitions for independent developer. You know, some of the larger developers, like id or the new Foundation 9, they're independent because they're not, you know, they're not owned by a publisher like Activision or Take-Two. But we call ourselves independent because not only are we not owned by a publisher, we also self-financed our entire game, the entire production of the game.
Now, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that.
Yeah,
you had a hard time getting funding. In fact, you didn't, unless you ask what it was like paying your way through a development process.
Well, actually, it wasn't. We didn't have a hard time because we knew we weren't going to get funding from anybody, so we didn't even bother. We just skipped it all together. We waited until the game was finished, pretty much finished, and then we started pitching it to publishers. And so in the interim, while we were working on the game, we built the fan base on Newgrounds.com, developed the fan base there. And so by the time we went to publishers, we could say, you know, here's our game. It's nearly finished. Just needs to be tested for compatibility issues on the console. And, you know, we had this gigantic fan base You know, we have over 11 million people that have played the prototype on Newgrounds.
Well, that kind of gets to another question. I wasn't sure because it was kind of a sleeper hit, but I guess it was 11 million people. It can't be that much of a sleeper.
That was
what
I was wondering for the free Flash game.
Yeah, yeah, there we go. I was wondering if it had paid for itself yet, being that you are you like still dodging your creditors or anything like that.
Well, we're not dodging our creditors, but you know, we're not driving Lamborghinis either.
You know, I had a driving analogy right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just not driving the Porsches.
It is sad because we got really, really good reviews, and you know, we're still getting good reviews on the game. And you know, everybody worked really hard, but you know, it is our first game, so you know, we didn't know what to expect. We're also you know, developers first and businessmen second, so you know, we know that we're kind of going through the school of hard knocks right now with you know, how to make money in the industry.
So when you say we, exactly how many people are involved in this process?
Well, there was a total of 8 full-time developers and 8 part-time developers that worked on the title. The core group is of course the, you know, the full-time people. So it's a very, very small team for a 3-SKU title. You know, typically a team for a console game will be, you know, 50 people. But of course, you know, when we put this together, we knew that we weren't going to have money to do it as a, you know, big 50-person team. So we just figured out how to do it with a lot less people.
So where were the people working before they decided to form the Behemoth?
Well, Dan Paladin, who's the artist behind Alien Hominid, was working at Presto Studios, and Presto Studios closed in the summer of 2002. He came to work for the company that I was working for, Gratuitous Games, and right when he got there, he and Tom Fulp, Tom who owns Newgrounds, had released the prototype on Newgrounds, and just by coincidence, I was playing the prototype, and I thought, damn, this is a great game. We ought to make this game into a, you know, console game. And a few weeks later, our boss came in and said that he was going to be closing down the company as well. So talked to a couple of the programmers and kind of did spreadsheets and figured out how we could build a team from the team that was there at Gratuitous to make the title. So Tom Fulp went on to program the game, game design and game programming for the console version, and Dan went on to do most of the art. There's a few other people that did art on the project too, but mostly it's Dan's work, and we just had a really small team.
Well, here's a surprise. Speaking of Dan, I believe we have him on the line now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Hey. Is he there? Great.
Look, it's like a party.
Welcome
line
to the show, Dan.
Thank you.
That was Nate. My name's Alon, Dan. Thanks for coming on. So now we have John Baez, the producer of Alien Hominid, and Dan Paladin, am I right?
Yeah.
All right. One of the designers and lead artist for this game. So we were just talking about the history of all the people involved. And the next thing I wanted to step into is the fact that your publisher, at least in the U.S., is O3.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, we had mentioned them on the show a long time ago because they sort of stepped forward and said, we're going to be publisher of independent titles. And so far, at least to my knowledge, you guys are the only people that they've actually published.
Well, they've published 2 other PC games besides ours, but those were licensed products from Europe.
Okay.
So I guess in terms of, yes, if you're asking, are there any other independent American developers working for O3, to our knowledge, there isn't.
Yeah. And I was always excited about O3, because, I mean, it was an interesting way it formed anyway. Not that that's really what we're doing our show on today, but it was a guy from Capcom who split off and decided to just make his own production company because he didn't like how everything in the industry was becoming so homogenous, I guess. So he decided to do the indie dev thing, and I think it's really great that they actually released one because I sort of had a hunch that nothing would happen with it. And so I'm curious how you sort of hooked up with them and made it all happen.
Well, you know that that the guy who started O3 no longer works at O3, and he's now the president of IDOS, right?
Well, I do now. Really, I don't keep up with all my news as well as I should.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't know that?
that happened about a month ago, and so I guess there you have it. So, yeah, you know, maybe the...
But he was there when your game was published.
Yeah, he was there when our game was published. This came down about, I guess, about a month ago now.
Yeah, I think it's Chris Jelinek that's in charge now. Is that right?
Yeah, he was a vice president there, and now he's president. So, you know.
So how did the whole process go? Because I know that you guys weren't seeking out, you know, venture capital or anything to produce this title. So, but eventually you had to sort of market it around and say, hey, we've got this product that we think is actually pretty good.
Yeah, it just went through the grapevine. By the time that we were, this is last year, right before E3, we had seen, you know, we had made a huge spreadsheet of all the publishers in the U.S., and we just cold called them all and started talking one by one to each of the gatekeepers. And eventually, you know, we didn't know that Bill was leaving Capcom. And eventually, just mutual contacts put us in contact together. And then they said, you know, look, we're thinking of, you know, or we have formed this new company and we want to bid on your project. And they did. And, you know, we had four offers on the game, but
really?
We decided to go with O3.
So, you know, how much bending did you have to do to sort of, I know you didn't have to give up any of your IP or anything, but was it like a tough deal to have to negotiate, go back and forth, or do you feel like they sort of got the better of you at any point? That's our music. We gotta get.
Well, I can't really answer that question.
I'm getting too deep.
But you know, it is something where first-time developers really need to do as much due diligence as they can on the companies that they sign with, whether
right.
it's, you know, whoever that company is.
We'll be back
hold
after the
thought.
Break.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
With the guys from Alien Hominid.
Where else are you going to find a Master of Science program in technology that creates thinkers who understand how business works and how to apply the technology? Where else are you going to discover a graduate degree in technology that is customized to meet your objectives? Where else in the Valley, on campus or online, can you study at the only private university that gives you the opportunity to focus in specialized areas like network security, artificial life programming, and game studies, as well as technology management? Where else? Where else but the University of Advancing Technology? UAT's graduate technology program is accelerated. It combines business with technology. It offers the flexibility to adapt quickly to changes that come in high-tech fields. Feed your brain, lead, manage. You won't find this innovative environment anywhere else. UAT, the select private university where you'll be fully immersed in technology. The experience is unrivaled. Click uat.edu. That's uat.edu.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio with myself, Alon, and...
Nate.
That's Nate. All right, so we have John Baez and Dan Paladin, people who worked on Alien Hominid, one of the only independently developed and later published by a publishing company that makes them non-independent anymore. Well... The publishers aren't independent anyway. They're on the show with us. If you would like to speak to them, or us, or, you know, Andrew and the soundboard, whatever, call us at 602-277-KFNX. If you're not local to Phoenix, you can also call toll-free at 866-536-1100. Interestingly, the same number that these two folks called in on. So, I was asking you about something you weren't incredibly comfortable answering, which is understandable.
Right.
I'm known to overstep my bounds. But Nate,
I guess I have some acceptable questions. Okay. I don't know. I guess for me, I really like the style of the game. I love the old school hand-drawn stuff. And I was just wondering, was there any particular reason for going with that style, or were you just trying to be different or trying to be old school?
There's a few reasons. I mean, we were always fans of old school stuff. I mean, I love River City Ransom and all those kinds of things back then. And so did the rest of the guys. We tried doing 3D as one of the possible aesthetics, but it just doesn't have same kind of kinetic energy that you'd end up with where it is now, you know?
So, yeah.
We gave it some shots and stuff, but, I mean, the overall underlying reason is because it just feels better, and we love old school, so we wanted to do it in the entire old school way, doing it all ourselves and drawing it.
That's awesome. Well, I guess this leads into another question. Aside from the porn pop-up ads, what's different from the Flash version to now the console?
There's quite a bit. The main gameplay is beefier in the fact that the alien can do a lot more. In the Flash version, he can't do things like in the console, like rolling, power shot by holding down your attack. He can still bite everybody's head off, but he can flip them over and throw them, and he has grenades now and a lot more power-ups, as well as, lots of vehicles and riding on Yetis and stuff. And it's two-player in the console version.
Yeah, we were doing that a couple days ago.
Now, one of the things I found interesting is that the mini games were sort of extensive, especially with the PDA games. How much effort had to go in, like, relative to the effort making the main game? How much effort did you put into just the side stuff?
Well, I think there was... They varied, because there's a number of mini games. You know, I think there's... in the U.S. version, there's five mini games. Some of them took a couple nights for Tom and Dan to design and program, and others, like the PDA games, because it includes a level editor where you can make your own levels and share with other people, you know, took a lot more work from just a technical standpoint. You know, plus those games are four-player. So, you know, getting the whole four-player thing working when the main game is just two players also took, you know, some time.
So... How much testing was involved in, I guess, the entire product?
A lot.
And did you also do all of that in-house with just you guys?
No, we didn't. We started out doing it in-house just about the time that we were getting the contract signed. And then we went, we hired two testers ourselves, and then our publisher, who is responsible for testing of the game, hired their crew of testers to test them.
All right, so let me ask something which is sort of on topic with the other stuff that we've been dealing with lately. Is your publisher also responsible for submitting all of the content to the ESRB for rating purposes?
Oh, yeah. That's what a publisher is for.
Okay, so you basically didn't have a hand in that process.
No, they do all the submissions. A publisher does all the submissions to the ESRB. They do the submissions to the first party, which is like, you know, Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft. You know, they do concept submission, and then they do the final build submission for permission to manufacture it.
But now it has to go through you first, right? Because I imagine the publisher doesn't sit there and play every inch of the game, right? So you had to tell them what's in it to begin with, right?
Well, yeah, you're required to, you know, tell your publisher what's in it, because, you know, In everybody's development contract, it says, you know, you're not going to put anything in there that's, you know, going to be tasteless.
Yeah,
so,
like a hidden
yeah, so what do you think happened with Rockstar? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't even imagine. I mean, there's so much code that just doesn't get used, but you can't pull it out because you don't know if it's going to mess something up.
Yeah, it'll break something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, in that case, you know, there's nothing devious going on there.
We're the media, and so our number one job, at least these days in media, is to speculate.
Yes.
That's what we have the luxury of doing.
I don't know. Dan, what do you think?
Well, I mean, a lot of the time when you are submitting your game, you make footage of the worst possible moments of your game, whether it be gory or whatnot, and they review that reel before they review anything else. I don't think there's that many people that actually play through the whole game. They go on your trust. So I'm not exactly sure how it got in there. I'm just going to say that there's lots of stuff in there, and somebody just didn't speak up.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was locked, and they didn't expect anybody to be able to unlock it. I mean, personally.
Yeah,
I kind of figured something like that. I mean...
Yeah, we don't need to go on and just talk about that all day, but...
We talked about that enough. Enough today. We don't need to go on
it
again.
God, it's consumed my life today.
That's a long hour and 20 minutes.
Unreasonable. All right, so do you have any other art-like questions or whatever for Dan? You had a bunch of stuff in there.
I had a few questions, but then he wasn't on right away, so I kind of like, well, I won't use those anymore, and got rid of them. Silly me.
I mean, I'm curious, like, what was the... You started off, and you didn't have as many people as you did when you started doing the console stuff, right? You only had a few people working on the Flash thing, am I right?
Oh, well, it was just Dan and Tom.
All right, from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And so that's when you stepped in and said, we should probably turn this into a full-fledged console game.
Well, that was when it was just this bizarre coincidence that Dan started working for our company. and someone had sent me the link to Alien Hominid weeks before, and I started playing it, and I just loved it. I just couldn't not stop playing it. And
see, I have a hard time playing it because I died approximately 1,000 times.
You know, I didn't get anywhere. You know, I just didn't get anywhere. I was just totally taken by the graphics and by the gameplay, just the simple, just make you feel good gameplay. And
well, very reminiscent to Metal Slug. That was my first thing when I started playing.
That's fairly clear, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just that coincidence. Like, this is too bizarre not to act on. You know, I mean, what's the possibility that two guys working in the game industry are going to just happen to start working at the same company and then both get laid off and, you know, have the opportunity to turn this around and do something different?
What was the biggest or most difficult step mentally to take this from, okay, a concept, a fun project we worked on, to, all right, we're going to actually devote ourselves to producing this? And, you know, spend all our money and everything we have to just hoping that it works out.
I don't know. I guess that's a question for Dan, because...
On my end, doing production, it really wasn't that much different than working on another game, because, a little bit short of a time span, you just work a lot. I mean, we might have put in more hours on average. Well, actually, we definitely did, but... to be honest with you, it didn't feel that much different because we were all professionals before we went and made a professional title with Alien Hominid together. So on my end, it wasn't that much different, to be honest.
But you're putting yourself on the line. You're saying, you know, I'm not going to work for somebody else. I'm going to risk everything I have.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's more of a state of mind than it is difference in the working condition. I've done a lot of projects alone anyway, so... It was just, I don't know, just kind of the...
Was there any part or any time in the process that anyone involved was like, hey, you know what, this is too much for me, it's too much of a risk, I'm going to have to bail out?
Well, we did have one guy bail out, a few months into the project. But, for me personally, when I started the project, I just realized that there was just too many coincidences that pointed to that the fact that we would actually get this on the shelf. I mean, there was just, you know, it was like we kept on rolling the dice and they just kept on coming up winners. You know, it's like every single huge, gigantic roadblock somebody threw in front of us, it's like, well, you know, we're too naive to run away. So
yeah.
let's start climbing the mountain. And at the end of the day, we stood on top of the mountain. And
there definitely were a lot of challenges, but we just kept the mindset that as long as we make something cool, somebody else is going to agree and then put us where we want to be.
And now you've got enough of a following and a good idea that you're working on another game.
Yeah, which actually I wanted to bring up. Could you tell us anything about that? Or is it still a little hush-hush?
I mean, I know you've already released some screenshots and stuff.
I can tell you what we showed at the Comic-Con Convention Center this year. It was it's a four-player brawler. You have four different knights, and each knight has a different magical power. You can bring your sword out and smack the crap out of stuff and block and things like that, or you can sheath your sword and then start using arrows and magic. And it's kind of like it's like an action RPG in a way. And I say RPG lightly though, because it's more of I killed a bunch of things, and now I can kill more.
What is it, an RPG, you know?
Kill more better.
It's like RPG light. It's just you just see your character.
There's no books lying around that you got to read?
Well, no. I mean, like, your combos grow and things like that, but we keep it pretty simple. I mean, for people to grasp and discover.
So. Well, just like Alien Hominid. Is it going to have the same impossible to get to the second level factor as Alien Hominid does?
Oh, yeah, I don't know how you're supposed to pass that B that's crushing all the cars, but...
Learn the pattern, learn the...
Yeah, I don't know if it's as reflex-intensive as a freeway with the giant B attacking you. I think it's a much different... I mean, it's a different genre, so...
All right, well, we got to go to break one more time. Can you guys stay on the line for the next segment?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.
We'll be right back after these messages.
else are you going to find a Master of Science program in technology that creates thinkers who understand how business works and how to apply the technology? Where else are you going to discover a graduate degree in technology that is customized to meet your objectives? Where else in the Valley, on campus or online, can you study at the only private university that gives you the opportunity to focus in specialized areas like network security, artificial life programming, and game studies, as well as technology management? Where else? Where else but the University of Advancing Technology? UAT's graduate technology program is accelerated. It combines business with technology. It offers the flexibility to adapt quickly to changes that come in high-tech fields. Feed your brain, lead, manage. You won't find this innovative environment anywhere else. UAT, the select private university where you'll be fully immersed in technology. The experience is unrivaled. Click uat.edu. That's uat.edu.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
I'm taking over.
Takes over. Don't forget, we've got to talk about UAT. Go to uat.edu if you want to get into the gaming industry, learn how to produce, learn how to draw, all
art,
that stuff.
Software, all that good stuff.
You can do it. So we're going to bring back John and Dan. Just for a couple minutes, and I know we have a caller now who called in, I assume, to talk to you folks, so we're going to bring him on in a second.
I have a funny feeling he's from Canada.
Yeah. Before we do, I remember when I was speaking to John at GDC when we first met, he explained to me that if you want to get a copy of the game...
Yeah, buy it from their website,
because
they get way more money than if you buy it at the store.
Exactly. You can give me some details on that, John?
Yeah, one of the ways that we finance the production of our games is to sell the game directly from our website, and it is just a different revenue stream. Typically, developers don't do any of the extra revenue streams. They just depend on their publisher. So we do figurines, we do T-shirts, skateboard decks, we do the game, we sell the game. So, yeah, if anybody out there really wants the game, they should buy it from our website, and there's free shipping. So.
Yeah, and I can tell you from first-hand experience, it's actually really fun, although very difficult game.
Well, there's lots of difficulty settings. So,
that's true, too. I kept it on the default.
And we also have a gore setting. If you don't like the blood, you can turn it to flowers.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure all of our listeners are going to go right there. All right, well, thank you very much. And so anybody who's listening, if you're going to buy the game, first of all, it'll be probably too hard to find in the stores. And second, it would just be a real kick in the pants not to buy it from their website because it helps them out a lot. So I want to bring, I believe we have Adam, and like we said, probably from Canada, on the line. Is this Adam?
Yep.
All right, did you have a question for the guys from Behemoth?
Yeah, I was just reading that there's going to be a Game Boy version, and I was just wondering if there'd be a DS version as well.
What were your plan for the handheld versions of the game?
Yeah, there is a Game Boy version. We have licensed the rights to do the Game Boy version to our European publisher that we love a lot, Zoo Digital, and they're working on the GBA version right now. Should be out in the fall, and we're really looking forward to it because it plays amazingly well. It's really
fun. Yeah, they're doing a great job.
That was going to be my next question. Have you expected there to be any sort of limitations or anything to the handheld in comparison to the full-fledged console versions?
Well, you know, it's not going to be multiplayer. I mean, it's not the console version, but the work that they've done is just amazing, you know, so, because you know how they do GBA games. Sometimes they don't live up anything.
Yeah, well, they're totally different games usually.
Right. So this one is great. And
I want to go out on a limb and say it's the closest conversion I've ever seen for a Game Boy.
Yeah.
But they're not going to put in the two player simultaneous with a Game Boy Link or anything?
No.
Oh,
it'll be single
bummer.
Player. And there'll be a few less levels because it all doesn't fit. Of course, it's all different. It doesn't have the real gorgeous, line weight and graphics of the big PS2 or GameCube version. But it's pretty darn fun.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Adam, did you have any other questions?
No, that was it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in. Appreciate it. All right, so I think we're going to give these guys a break, let them off the hook and go home, do whatever they were doing. It's probably late where Dan is. You're not on the West Coast, are you, Dan?
No.
All right, so you can go to sleep or
something.
Yeah. So remind everybody, go to alienhominid.com if you're interested in getting the game, and we're hopefully going to be doing a trivia show sometime in August, and I am hoping we'll have some prizes to give away, alien hominid themed, along with a whole bunch of other stuff.
So tons of stuff.
Stay tuned for that. And thank you very much, John and Dan,
yeah,
for
thanks, guys, coming
on the
on.
Show. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. We had a great time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So we're coming to the end of our show.
Yeah.
But
pretty quick here.
As usual, there's a little bit of news we can cover. Now, we next week are going to be playing, like it's discussed at the beginning of the show, we can't really play the entire interview with Jack Thompson. Just because that would creep over into two shows, and there's no way I'm doing that.
Cause... And you don't want to hear the whole thing. I mean, for the hardcore people, they can download it and listen to all of it. But
let me tell you, I don't even want to work on editing it, because I don't know.
You had a good idea. We should just listen to it and then, like, add comments.
Now's the time. Andrew, are you ready for this? Like, we're going to play a little clip from it. I don't even know what clip we're going to play, because I haven't had a chance to play
with it. Spin the roulette wheel?
All right, let's just play 1 minute. I mean, I understand how hacks work, and you know, it was obvious to anyone who knew anything about games that it clearly was built into the game, and for them to deny it or try to deny it was just silly, because I knew, oh, next week someone's going to prove that it's not, and it's just a matter of time.
Well, you know, I think if they had admitted it up front, what they knew to be true, and they knew it before the rest of us knew it, it would have been better for them. And,
certainly.
You know, everybody learned since Watergate that the cover-up's worse than the initial offense.
Of course. Now,
so they played chicken with Hillary Clinton, which is not a smart thing to do, and they lost. And now, of course, GTA San Andreas is not even on store shelves anywhere in America.
Yeah, I would doubt that, because it hasn't been actually banned, has it?
No, it hadn't been banned, but when I say that, it's what I mean is it's out
the
of all the
major
retailers.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to ask about, like, clearly your fight in the past has not focused exclusively.
All right, exciting stuff, as you can tell. Electric.
Yeah, I think we might do, like, a Mystery Science Theater expose on that thing next week, because I am just not as exciting an interviewer as I thought. The truth is, Jack just, wow, he took control of that interview, so... Anyway, we've got another caller.
Like I said, he is a lawyer, and he can do stuff like that.
He'd beat me. Anyway, we've got the other Adam from Canada. Not a first-time caller, am I right, Adam?
What? Oh, this is my first time.
Oh, it is?
Oh, it is. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, you're the one you said you wanted to call. See, we keep in touch. For all those who aren't aware, you can go to chatterboxgameshow.com.
Go to the forums.
We have forums, and we have all sorts of fans of the show. You can meet everybody. Maybe one day we'll have a meet and greet. I don't know. Anyway, Adam, what would you like to say?
Oh, I was just wanted to talk to them, but I guess I missed it. I was just saying, you should bring it a PSP version. It would be much better than a DS.
It would, I think, especially because of the screen and the vibrance of the screen. It would be interesting, although I hadn't brought it up. In fact, for some reason, I didn't even think about it. But basically, they said Game Boy Advance version's happening, and that's pretty much it. They would have, I think, spoken up if there was a PSP.
No talk on
the
DS
works.
Or PSP. Yeah.
And in fact, they're not even developing the Game Boy Advance version.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, well, they said they really like their publisher, and that, well, you heard it, a great job's being done on the game, so I trust it'll be a fantastic conversion like they said it would, but they're working on another title now, and it's really limited what they can say because it's very early. But they did show some pics or video of it at Comic-Con this year. And if you just search on Google for Behemoth New Game, you'll be able to see some pictures of it. I think it's sort of reminiscent, like this one, like Alien Hominid was sort of like Metal Slug. Their new game is going to be like Guardian Heroes on the Sega Saturn, if you remember Guardian Heroes. There are other games in the genre like Guardian Heroes, so I wouldn't say it's just that game. But my point is, it would be sort of similar.
It has a feel of it.
Exactly. And so they're probably busy working on that, since there's only a few guys working on the games at this company. You know, they have to keep their focus on whatever their current title is. And so licensing out the property is a good idea, I think, for their bottom line. Anyway, thank you for calling, Adam.
Yeah, see, I can see a PSP version being better with wireless play.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
That'd be nice. Yeah. They could have done... They said they're not doing two-player simultaneous on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah,
which is
that,
odd.
We'll see.
I guess, I mean, it's an extra challenge. Yeah. Maybe they're trying to... I don't know what the reason is.
Well, they already got to cut down the game because of lack of space. So
yeah.
Maybe they just didn't have room.
Limitations. I don't know. But either way, I'm sure it's going to be a fine, fine title. And you're right. PSP would be an interesting version.
Now I'm going to get way off topic. I asked the last Adam that was on here, do you know of any Robin's Donuts up in Canada?
Oh, actually, I do.
Really? They're still around. Aren't those awesome? I love those donuts.
No, actually, I have no idea.
No? Ah!
He's just pulling your chain, dude.
I think I saw one somewhere in Toronto.
Okay.
But I can't be sure. I think that was some other place.
I've seen three in my lifetime, and like if you eat like a lawn, you would die.
Dude,
they're just that good.
I love my donuts. If you remind me, I'll call my cousins. All right. They're in Toronto. Anyway, thanks a lot for calling, Adam. We appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good night.
All right. Bye. So.
Oh, yeah, we didn't mention, actually, on my IRC, one of my friends that's listening, he just mentioned that the GTA was banned in Australia.
There's all sorts of...
But they banned lots of games out there. So.
According to Jack Thompson, Hillary Clinton is going to run for president on the platform that video game violence needs to be dealt with. And there's just so much. I really do encourage people to listen to the interview. It's not that it sucks or anything.
He's kind of long-winded whenever he speaks.
A little bit dry, but he says a lot of important things and clears up misconceptions that people have, because everything that's being written on the internet, I don't know if it's biased or not, but it's truncated and you don't get the whole story. And he did a little bit of an explanation for the class action lawsuit that's happening and why it's not as stupid as it sounds on the internet. He even said, like, I can understand why you think it's ludicrous based on what's written on the internet, because it doesn't really capture what it's all about.
He did get a little weird at the end when you were talking to him.
Yeah,
but other than that,
through to 60 minutes. And then,
yeah, he was pretty pretty level-headed.
Yeah.
So.
But anyway, so like this interview might not make you all hot-headed and mad, which if you listen to, you might want to get. So, you'll be disappointed if you want to get
that's
angry.
What you're looking for. You probably got the wrong spot.
But really, I just feel bad about it because I'm like a big wuss. I'm like, oh, that's a good point. I kind of agree. Oh, you're right.
I like the new guy that doesn't really interview is like really hard hitting with the.
Oh man, Nate blew me away. He totally took control.
I was talking over that guy like.
Better interview than me. But anyway, so I'm gonna have that online this week for everybody. I'm sorry we didn't cover much other news, but we had a killer interview with the guys from Behemoth. Go to alienhominid.com to order that game because everyone should own it.
Don't hit the stores.
Yeah, and pay attention to their upcoming game and news and everything. And of course, we'll be talking about it when we get more information in the future. That's about it. We will be back next week, 7 p.m., August 6th or 7th. I don't know. 7th, I think. Pay attention, everybody. We will be back next week. Thank you so much for listening.
Later.